Unfortunately, you know, we're together today during the aftermath of Sandy and the big blizzard that came through on the East Coast. And this is pretty timely to talk about this, but you should know that this has been 4 years in the making. So it's concerning, and this is something to probably talk about, that we have this information and we've been addressing disaster preparedness for a while, but unfortunately we may not have everything we need. So hopefully this will be shared and push policy, which is really what this is all about, to try to make sure that everybody is taken care of after, and this is really within the 96 hours following a disaster, so what I'll be talking about. I'm Cheryl Erminer. I'm a PhD licensed clinical social worker from the American Medical Association. I'm a senior scientist there, was with aging and disaster preparedness, science, medicine, and public health. However, have transitioned and AMA is changing a bit, but I'm with health outcomes and quality improvement. This information is going to be used to push quality improvement, but we're not quite sure how. So that's the good news and the sad news that it's taking a while. In any case, I have no disclosures, financial or other relationships to really talk about, but this has been supported by the CDC, and this is a grant that, as I said, has been 4 years in the making. So what I'm going to talk about a little bit is about the disaster preparedness, the basic assumptions we went into this project with, and then the methodology and the results that came. And this is only one phase of four, and this is an initial phase of one of the phases for the focus groups. And we thought that the aging group, the four groups that we looked at, had significant information that we could learn from and push policy. So in any case, as I stated, the initial assumptions for this project were that we were looking at disaster preparedness and the aspect that in the first 96 hours of an event, what would be needed for those who have health issues to be understood and to be cared for. Because this was after the wake of Katrina, actually, that we, American Medical Association, had an area of disaster preparedness and the aging. And AMA had come up with a medication reconciliation card that was nationally known and vetted to ensure that all older adults, all individuals with chronic diseases, would be able to own this card and take it to their healthcare provider to reconcile the medications that were needed. So when the two groups came together, we thought, why wouldn't we use something like this for a disaster? So we had submitted to the CDC and they had shared their funding and provided us with the opportunity to see not that medication card, but what would individuals want, what do professionals want to ensure that they could identify medications and health issues within the first 96 hours of a disaster, or displacement, we should state, as we saw. So the methodology for this really included participatory research, where we really wanted to get to the experts and the individuals and have everybody come together to determine what is needed for the next phase of for this project. We ensured that we evaluated the information that was available. This was also a translational grant aspect that we took from existing data to support where we were going and what the experts and the community wanted. We gathered both qualitative and quantitative data. What I'm going to present here is just qualitative data from the focus groups. So our sample overall was very purposive, and it was designed to attend to disaster areas. So we worked with, for this project, we worked with four FEMA regions, and we brought, in the focus group portion of this, we asked the focus group participants, and we wanted to get specific information about the data elements that was predetermined by experts that should be on this device. So we enlarged the group because we really wanted to make sure we got a good representative sample within the communities, but we only had limited resources. So our questions were pretty specific, and we knew that the information would be pretty directed. So the methodology team and our consultants had supported that we could get 15 individuals into these focus groups. In any case, we began, we chose the focus groups, and I'll talk a little bit about that, based on some ESRI tapestry data, that's GIS data mapping, to determine a representative population sample that we could get. We also outreached to communities based on the National Disaster Life Support Centers that have been established throughout the country. They always put on educational pieces for their community about how to prepare yourself. We wanted to engage them and see who their resources were and how we can get individuals from the local level. I'll share a little bit about that. The community engagement model was based on the CDC community engagement model. And then AMA, while we were the individuals who were recruiting, we allowed each community to determine the method of their recruitment because we wanted to, we knew that at the local level, they have the relationships and they know how to recruit. So I will be talking about actually FEMA Region 5, 7, and, oh, I can't remember the other FEMA region right now, but there's three FEMA regions that I'm going to be talking about the outcomes from the focus groups, but for the entirety of the project, we try to reach all the FEMA regions, either in this focus group portion or in the pilot portion, which was the final phase, the fourth phase. So this is the community engagement model that we use, that we put the individual at the center, but we wanted to really see if we can, where each community would look for those who wanted to participate for the focus group or for the pilot. We kept this very central because of the fact that we know that individuals, we wanted to make sure this was a public health issue. And we wanted to make sure that we could relate to people, whether they were going to the barber shop and getting information, or if they were going for their utilities. We wanted to get the public at where they were. So we looked to the community NDLS centers to determine that. We also had recorded each of this focus group session, and then we did our internal reliability, and we used BOIATSIS as a qualitative process for this, what I'm presenting today with the subgroup of older adults. And we did reliability checking, we did coding and recoding, so I'll share some of that information. In any case, from the three FEMA regions, and there were two within one region, there it is, it's the fifth and the seventh, and I think there is, there once the FEMA region at the bottom five really is sixth, I believe. So I apologize for that. In any case, we had a nice assortment of individuals who participated for this qualitative piece, but as you could see for each of the region, we didn't get 15. There were two that really had 15 involved. And then we had a very small one in Region 7. And again, the interesting part was weather had to do with that. So weather is really a challenge for many reasons. You could see that the race of individuals that attended, we had a significant Asian population, and we actually purposely, again, that's why we chose to do a purpose of peace, we wanted to make sure that we could have a nice range. But then again, we also had a large Caucasian population for these four focus groups within the three regions. We asked about what is their current access to computer and to electronic health information. And as you could see, no access or they have it at home. We were hoping to see more with public, but that wasn't coming up. So part of the question for this project was what would individuals want to use and then what would they want to share during this first 96 hours that they think that they could have no matter what happened. So the analysis, as I stated, we had a first independent reading and then we had a second, and from that we did get a 93.5% reliability check, which we were happy about for the qualitative piece. The outcomes from that really highlight, and then we did a Spearman's, I forgot about the Spearman's correlation, to really make sure that we did this accurately. These are the questions and the topic areas that we attended to. And again, from the first phase, we ask health providers, what should be, what's the minimum data set that should be on this device, card, whatever it is? And we knew that there were specific information pieces from that data element set that the public would not do. And these are some of the areas. We also wanted to really clarify the type of device they would use. So from this, we really highlighted looking at the topic areas, and they really talked about the paper vehicle really not being durable during any disaster or displacement. A card and a chip had significant importance because they realized and they had learned that the chip has multiple health information potential. It could have large data sources to have on there. And it could be put on anything, a license, a credit card, whatever. And then the cell phone was of interest to the focus groups. However, a few of them said, I don't have it, and I really don't want to operate it. And what if the cell phone line came down? So they were very knowledgeable individuals who really thought through these things. Sharing information about the blood-related diseases was another big topic, and I'll share with you from the outcomes that really the issues of HIV, of mental illness, those sensitive topic information, they unanimously said, we want to do this to ensure the safety of the providers, the first responders, as well as the other people in the area. So there was significant social responsibility that all the, especially older adults, wanted to share and talk about. The other topic areas was updating the health information itself. That had significant interest with the older adult population, these groups, because they did not want to do it themselves. And we had one physician who was in the group with us who was listening to the outcomes of the focus group, and they were appalled because we're pushing for self-management of health information. These people and the people we've seen don't want to do it at all. And I always say, they didn't get into healthcare because they want to know about it. Why would they want to do it? And they don't feel competent to be able to keep it updated. And it's a lot of work. And as we know, that's what they've talked about. So the other is the biomarkers for protection. They agreed protection is important, especially during this time. And then the motivation to use the vehicle in the stored healthcare. And this motivation piece was very interesting as they really identified that they don't want it just for a disaster, they want it for everyday use. So their motivation was, hey, why not? This will be, if I get in a car accident, I would want specific information to be shared with it. Not everything. And as you know, like with banking cards, you can do that. Only specific information goes to certain areas at certain times. So, having stated that, they identified the paper as positively viewed but not durable. They identified the card and the chip has the opportunity for large storage amounts and that the cell phone was more age specific. So, the motivation. Now, I love this quote that was put on there. Not motivated to keep my own health information updated, but they went on to say that they want it for everyday use. So we talk about one-stop shopping. They really want to make sure they could take this, have it updated, and be reliable for when they want it. Additional results identified that the one vehicle does not fit all, and actually in each of the focus groups from the entirety, and this is not just older adults because it came into those also, at least one person would always say, why can't we have a chip implanted in our body? At least one person out of each of these groups would say this. And they thought that this is the way that everybody would know the health information they need when they did not have access to things. Technology is vulnerable. Hacking is a concern. They were concerned about who would be able to know about this information. So there's significant work that's being done about user IDs and health identification numbers. So the data elements also, I spoke about the HIV and mental illness. They want to share it. They think there's a responsibility to protect others. There is also a question about language and dialects because they were concerned that some people would not be understood. They did want something that would be able to share that information. Pharmacies, they wanted the pharmacy to update it, their doctors to update it. They wanted families to have access to this. They wanted multiple family members to have their information. And that is not surprising, and that's something that we think could really be beneficial in the future. As you know, with younger adults and older adults being at different areas and states and the mileage difference. So the two questions that really have helped the AMA to push forward was the fact that the federal government is currently not involved in doing this, and they will call the disaster. However, the reality that people want their information, and that they want appropriate care and good care, and that they want the people to have the right information at the right time. But they want their family members and friends to have access to the information. Storing it, there is a big need for communication and resilience, so this is potential for providers, stakeholders, patients, and other community members to be able to have this information. Ultimately, there is significant endorsement for this. Here it is, though. Sandy has come in our wake. How many millions of people are being displaced, may not have access to their health information, may have, because by the time people are asked to leave, they do not always grab their medications or all their supplies that they have. A lot of people don't even know the supplies that they should be taking. So there is significant concern about the fact that if you had something on you, what would it be? And usually people do go for their ID, they go for their purses and their wallets. So our final phase is really the pilot of this. We had determined that from the focus groups, ultimately the highest interest was the credit card. So we had disseminated that, and that will be shared shortly, but the ultimate aspect was people over 80% knew where their credit card was when we had a follow-up call. So there was the real interest that this could be very beneficial for health issues and responses because they did not feel adequately supported, even though people do carry around their medication card. So I do have my information, and everybody who supported this from our staff, this was a major, major project that was supported by multiple institutions. It was a national project that was done, and there is a lot of individuals behind the scenes as well as myself being here, and Dr. James is the key person who really supported this, which we are thankful, as well as the CDC, and then the participants. I mean, it was such a pleasure to go to the communities and meet these individuals and hear what they had to say. So we really thank them for this information. So if you have any questions or any, I could answer a few now, but then I believe we have to get on. Yes. We didn't look at the age breakdown of that. The pilot is doing that because we also asked about caregivers. How many of those are caregivers currently, and how many of the younger caregivers want it versus how many of those who are being cared for want it? So that's the pilot phase that's looking into this. We just wanted to find out if they did want their family members to have something like this, and they did. Any other questions? Great. Well, thank you very much.